baby steps, baby steps. And you know what? Someone told me a few weeks ago, I was about to take on a project that I was deathly afraid of. I was so scared that I was going to fail. And she said to me, you have to fail 300 times before you win. So just go knock this one out. Let's go get it over with so we can get to your win.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Caprellian, and I'm joined by my co-host, sister, and talent management pro, Alexandra Caprellian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. On this next episode, we interview Aaliyah Engel, Air Force retiree, former ordnance tech, then went in to become a financial specialist and is now a business owner and a consultant who provides services that enhance workplace culture. Plus, we're going to get tips from her, an expert, on how to ID a toxic work culture in a place that you might be applying to. So stay tuned. Aaliyah Engel, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi.
Yeah. I prepped. I'm looking at my sister right now. I've got a glass of wine in my hand. I've got some questions that I know I definitely want to ask you. I'm not in my cubicle at the office. It's great. This is turning out to be the best part of my day. And the fact that we've got another Air Force alum, it just makes me feel so joint having you on the podcast. It's great. Not that I'm looking to be JQO or anything like that, but no, we don't need to go there.
But I'm here to represent the blue.
That's right. That's right. And I know you're going to drop some knowledge bombs on our listeners. Excited. So for those of you that are listening, we're going to talk about work culture. And I actually, quite frankly, I'm going to be learning throughout this discussion. We're also going to talk about transition stories, starting up a business. So I'm very excited. But before we get into that, we want our listeners to know who you are. So Aaliyah, if you don't mind, hey, tell everybody, where did you grow up and how did you join the military?
Yeah, sure. So I actually grew up as an Army brat. My mom and my dad were both in the Army. And I grew up very, very already acquainted with the military culture. So I at 18, I graduated high school. My mom kicked down my door the very first day after graduation and said, "Get out." So I said, "Okay, this is the only thing I have going for me then." So I went to the recruiter that day. And the Air Force recruiter snagged me as I was walking past her office to get to the Army recruiter. And I never made it down the end of the hall.
That's some good recruiting TTPs right there.
I never made it down.
That Armed Services Recruiting Center, you know, like what office and what hat you're by, that's money. That's money.
True.
You were somebody's mission maker. Check that out. All right.
Yeah.
Well, give us an overview of your history, like in the military. What did you do? Where'd you go?
Yeah, so we started out at good old Lackland at Basic, and then we moved on to Shepherd Air Force Base, not too far down the road from Lackland, for my tech school, where I learned how to be a bomb builder. And nice. At 18, I didn't care. I thought, this is cool. I'm going to go build bombs and, you know, get rough on the flight line. And I thought I was tough. I thought I had it in the bag, you know? And then I went to my first assignment at Tyndall. And the moment I get there, 9/11 happens and everything shuts down. Mm. Everything.
Wow.
I did not build a bomb the entire time I was there.
Really?
I was on patrol the entire time I was at Tyndall.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So after Tyndall, they sent me to Guam. And in Guam, I got hurt so many times. Just the nature of the job. I got hurt so much. I said, I know I got to change jobs. This is not going to work for me. If I keep doing this, I'm not going to make it to 20. So I came back to the States and they stationed me at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. And that's where I put in my application to retrain and I was selected for financial management. So I went to tech school again at Keesler, Air Force Base, Mississippi, where I learned how to be a financial manager.
Nice.
And after that, they sent me to, I went back to Eglin for a bit, but soon after I graduated the tech school, the Air Force opened the Air Force Financial Services Center up in South Dakota. Basically, they sent every finance a member in the Air Force up to South Dakota, except for just a few to leave at each base. So they sent every one of us up there to this massive processing center. And I was there for 4 years. And after that, they sent me to the schoolhouse where I taught 7-level for 4 years.
What's 7-level?
So when you go to tech school, you learn how to do your job. 7-level is the progressive training. That's okay. Where you learn how to do the tasks that are associated with upper management type stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, so I taught that for 4 years. And then after that, I went back to Eglin. I spent a lot of time in Florida, you'll see.
Gotcha.
I went back to Eglin, did 2 years there, and then they sent me over to Hurlburt, right down the road. And did another couple of years there where I worked at a pilot training school. And so there I was there. I was their financial manager. I was part of the missions where we would go out in the field and execute part of the lesson plans for the pilots. And then I was also the first sergeant. So I kind of did everything there. I didn't not ever have a job at Hurlburt. And then after Hurlburt, I finished at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama, and that's where I retired.
There you go. Home of the Air Force, right?
Yeah.
That's nice. Okay, well, that great overview, and I think you retired in 2021?
Exhausted. Exhausted. I actually retired. I technically clicked the button right in the middle of COVID.
Mm. Another COVID story. So listen.
Yep.
Yeah. Like,
it was bad.
If people right today are worried about trying to make it post transition, just imagine what it's like bearing down on transitioning in the middle of COVID. Good on you. Thanks for giving us an overview. Let's just get into the heart of the matter, the transition. When did you know that it was your time to leave?
I made the decision when I was in a work center that was creating a culture that was so toxic that I had become suicidal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This work center was so bad that everyone was basically in a survival mode. Nobody cared about each other because they had to cover their own necks. And I got to a point where I stopped going to work and no one even noticed.
Wow.
So on day three, one of my coworkers who did notice the signs, he came over to my house on day three of not seeing me at work, busted down my front door, found me in my bedroom, basically about to do something tragic. And he picked me up, threw me over his shoulder, took me to the ER, and said, promise me you will get yourself out of this. Promise me I will never see you in that place again. And I said, I promise. I didn't believe it at the time, but I said, I promise. And eventually I did go back. No one ever knew that's what happened to me because no one trusted leadership enough to tell them that's what happened to me. And I kind of just went back to normal, and when I finally got, had my head clear, I said, this is it. I'm checking out. This right here, I can't do this. And so I clicked the button and said, I'm going to go fix work cultures because of this. I don't want anyone else to feel this ever again.
Wow. That type of pivotal event in your life, it was not only an indication that it was your time to leave. It sounds like almost an inspiration for a new mission.
Yeah. And the worst part about it is that coworker that came to get me that day, he ended up taking his own life in 2021. So it's how do you process that? The only reason I'm here is because of him. And then he succumbed to his own depression. So I do this now because he did what he did. I do this now because I wouldn't have made it out of there if it weren't for him. I have to do this in honor of him.
And this happened when he was still working there? He was still there while that happened?
Yes. Yes. So, you know, us, when we're active duty, we know we're supposed to tell our first sergeant these things. We're supposed to tell our commander, you know, hey, this is what happened. But we were so afraid of our leadership in that particular location that we just, nope, not going to happen. I will get myself out of this. And thankfully I did.
Well, I'd like to know what does that mean? Like, how did you extricate yourself not only from that workplace environment, but I mean the whole transition? What was that like?
So after I clicked the button, I knew that I had 12 months to prepare myself. What they don't tell you is you really should be preparing yourself 24 months out. 12 months is not enough time. And what's interesting is that's not even what they give you on paper, because you know they're supposed to do skill bridge. You have 6 months of skill bridge. So really they only give you 6 months to prepare after your skill bridge is done. So I was already a step behind. COVID is going on, and I'm first thing I do is enroll in TAP. Oh, but guess what? Our TAP instructor has resigned, and because it's COVID, we're not going to get a new one. So just go do a bunch of CBTs. You'll be fine. I had nothing to help me get through transition. And one of the things that I have learned about that type of scenario is when I'm put in a position where it's sink or swim, I will find a way to swim, even if you don't give me the oars. I will find a way. And I went out and found so many resources that I never would have come across had I gone through a normal TAP class. I never would have been handed to me. I went out and found a library of resources to help me.
What were some of those resources that definitely paid off?
I would 100% still serving veterans. Their classes and their resume services, lifesaver. To this day, I still struggle with trying to get the resume part right. I am by no means a resume expert, but I would not be where I am if it weren't for still serving veterans.
Oh, that's good to know.
100%. Yep. Also, I would say that Veterati was very important to my success, because they will connect you with someone that's already an expert in the field that you want to be in. So if you want to talk to 12 different experts, you can do that with Veterati. And then there's ACP, American Corporate Partners. They offer you a mentor program, but what they do is they connect you, they link you up with a mentor, and then you meet with that same mentor once a month for 12 months. That was very beneficial for me as well.
Familiar with ACP, but I think you're the first person that mentioned Veterati on our podcast, and that's I've been looking forward to trying to find somebody that can give a bit of a deep dive and just inform service members more about what they do. So I'm glad you mentioned them and still serving veterans. I gotta look into that, because my resume sucks.
Yep.
All right. No, that's great. Well, after leveraging all those, where'd you go after that? Like after your transition?
Well, I initially thought that I wanted to get a job.
Who wants that? Come on.
Boy, was I wrong. So I originally tried to go out and, you know, I went into the field that I was working in the military, which was financial management. I tried to go right back into finance and it was miserable. It was absolutely miserable. And within 4 months I was gone because I didn't go for what was in my heart. I just went for what I could do. I guess I could do that. And of course that's never going to work. You can't do that, especially after dedicating, you know, 20 plus years to your first career. You're not going to want to dive right into the exact same thing in the civilian world. It's time to change. It's time to do what you want. And so I had to step away after 4 months. And it's unfortunate because most of us in our transition process, somewhere around 40%, I think it was, will leave their first job within 6 months. We all do the same thing. We all just try to get a job. We're not looking for the job.
So let me ask you this, because I have a theory, and I say it's a theory because I'm still in. I'm still making that Kool-Aid. It's good, though. I love who I work with. But my theory is that, you know, we get so, particularly the longer we're in, the more we're in this very niche ecosystem of whatever branch of service we're in, and we get certainly used to the job security. I mean, you know, you're going to get a paycheck on the 1st and the 15th. And so it's almost out of fear, a lot of people will go towards what they know, even though it's not what they want to do. Does that sound about right?
That is 100% why I did it that way. Yes.
And maybe not necessarily... a bad thing for people. I mean, it's okay to go to a job that you know, to kind of slowly immerse yourself in the waters of a completely different ocean.
Yeah.
But it's okay to also leave that job and go and pivot to something that you truly want to do.
Yeah.
So what did you?
Yeah.
So what was that pivot like for you?
I had a realization. And after I left that job, I thought, well, how am I going to fix cultures? How am I going to do this? You know, culture is a very new concept for most people. And so I really didn't know how to get into it. And so I started pursuing HR because I thought that was where I could make the most impact. And after getting a PHR and looking into these positions and doing the interviews, I realized that HR is not where I need to be because HR's hands are tied often. Mm-hmm. They even when they want to help, sometimes they can't. And so I said, that's not a position I want to put myself in. I want to be in a position where I can help everyone, no matter what position they're in. And that's when I realized I have to come in as a consultant. That's the only way to do this.
Oh, well, good for you, because I know what that feels like, of feeling like your hands are tied with, because my background is in HR. And it's so true, because you want to help, but sometimes there's nothing you can do. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do. And that's so aggravating.
Yeah. So just from my understanding, when we talk about HR and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, because I've thought about HR too. And there are a lot of great HR professionals out there, but they're first and foremost to ensure that a company is in compliance with the various laws that govern how you take care of employees, workplace regulations, whether it's state or federal. Mm-hmm. And then HR does help the employees, but they have to do it within the parameters that the law allows and in a manner that's consistent with what the company says you should be doing. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the big points to HR in a company, is to meet those legal ramifications. I like to say that we need to, in order to make it successful, not just for the company, but for the employees. But sometimes it works in the favor of the company.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's not HR, then Then what is it, Aaliyah?
After I realized that HR is not the way I wanted to go, I said, I got to be a consultant. That's the only way to do this the right way. And so I started diving into how to be an entrepreneur. This was kind of a last minute decision. You know, I didn't, you know, most entrepreneurs, they kind of been planning to be an entrepreneur their whole life. I didn't. I just kind of woke up one day and said, oh, that's what I should have been doing this whole time.
Well, that must have felt nice to have that realization.
Well, you know, I think a lot of us have that realization. And that's what I say is the end of your transition. Once you've realized where you're supposed to be, that is when your transition ends. Not when the calendar says it's over.
Mm. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's a good point. So
yeah.
How does that, I mean, that does that kind of take us up to the present?
Yeah. So that's where we are today. We've got Work Culture Works.
All right. Yeah, that's right. Well, we're going to talk about it. Okay. So trolling your Instagram profile, the boss whisperer for Work Culture Works. And I'm guessing that's kind of the genesis of what it means to be a consultant and start your own consulting business. I want to tell everybody though, before we get into this, I've seen, and maybe you've seen it on social media, where there are celebrities and they do charitable things and they get honorary degrees, an honorary degree from like these three Ivy League schools, mostly because it's also really good PR for that company. I'm telling you, when you look at Aaliyah's bio, it looks like honorary degrees, but those degrees are legit.
Yes.
I mean, she's a PhD candidate. She's got what? You got two master's degrees.
Three
master's degrees. So when we're talking about somebody that says, hey, I want to become a consultant and start my own business, this isn't just like coming out of nowhere. This isn't just leveraging, although it probably does leverage your experience in the military. You are a very educated woman. And so I want everybody to know, because I'm impressed. I mean, like, I'm looking at this, I'm like, I look forward to the day calling you doctor. And it's gonna happen. But tell us, Work Culture Works. What do you do for companies at Work Culture Works?
So for Work Culture Works, I currently offer three different programs or packages. The first one is where I come out and I provide workshops, or if you need a guest speaker for any of your workshops, anything like that. The second option is I'll come in and I will interview people. I will observe. Observations are usually the most effective way to extrapolate the data that I need. And then some, I'll do some interviews, or I'm sorry, some surveys, but some people are very afraid to do surveys because they think that either myself or HR is going to run to the boss and show them what they said on the surveys. I am 100% confidential. Everything I get from the people that I speak to never, ever gets back to the CEO, not even HR. I don't say anything that is identifiable. So I have the surveys, but I don't really like to use them unless I have to, because people don't want to be honest on them. Mm. But that's the second package. And then I come back after I extrapolate all the data, I come back and I tell the manager, hey, this is what I found, and here's your proposed mitigation plan. It's up to them to execute it. I will provide a once a month follow-up for the next 12 months to make sure that they're executing it the way they need to, because, you know, things change as we start implementing plans. And also, culture takes time. Things don't happen overnight with culture. And then the third package is what I call the covert undercover boss. And that's basically when I come in and HR hires me as an employee. And I go through the entire system from onboarding to exit interview. You show me how this company onboards, trains, promotes, and exits people. Oh. That's the only way to get the most accurate data is to do it myself. And when I do that package, I tell the CEOs, don't even tell HR that I'm undercover, because they can potentially that can, you know, skew results. So I want nobody but you to know that I'm undercover.
Oh my God.
That's interesting. Awesome. First of all, I mean, do you have like a James Bond wardrobe with wigs and like other?
I do. I have a lot of wigs and I'm very good with makeup.
There you go. Well, you know, I think that's a huge and valuable service. I've been in a commanding officer position once where I had a command climate survey. And I will tell you, like, I've seen commanders, and I have to, and this is a really hard thing to admit, but there were so many commanders that I looked up to that were, and it was when I was on recruiting duty that did it right. And I remember reading the report from the survey that we got, and it was so painful because you put your heart and soul into it. And it doesn't mean that you do it well. I mean, there were things that I definitely did wrong. But having somebody also not just give you the results, but give you recommended actions, that takes a lot of burden off of a company's leadership, I would imagine, because sometimes it's hard to think of or even get the staff around to come up with responses when you still have the white noise of that pain associated with being told you suck. It's hard. Even when you accept it, it doesn't mean the pain goes away. So, I mean, I don't know. Is that something that you've observed as well?
Oh, absolutely. Usually there are process problems, but in addition to process problems, there's almost always a bad manager problem somewhere in the chain, and people don't want to hear that it's them.
Yeah.
It's just an unfortunate part of the process is I have to tell you, hey, this is how you are contributing to this. I can help you. We can turn this around, but you are a part of the problem.
Yeah. And I guess that's the art, right? Because it's a coaching conversation that you have to have with your client.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
What can I ask a question really quickly? What, when people reach out to you, can you share with a scenario or what they actually say that they need your service for? I mean, I can only imagine because, like, to what you were saying, Christopher, it's true that a lot of people don't want to hear it, but it's I can only imagine that a lot of people know that there's a serious problem, but they just don't know how to fix it. And then, so when they come to you and they request for your services, I mean, what scenarios are they giving you?
Usually it's, hey, everybody just quit on me and I don't know why. I thought I was doing everything right, but I just had a mass exodus in my company and I can't even open my doors today. Wow. I had that phone call.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So things like that. And the unfortunate part is managers don't know they need a culture check until it's already reached that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So you start Work Culture Works. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about what it's like being a consultant, like essentially starting a consulting business. What are some of the mechanics behind that? Like things that you learned, maybe some things that people need to consider and maybe some hard lessons learned because I'm sure it's a lot of discovery learning.
There is so much to learn. You're never going to learn it all. You're never going to run out of opportunities. You're never going to run out of ways to connect with people. You can't do it all. You're going to have to make choices. What's most effective for you and your needs and your industry?
Hmm.
The available resources are endless, especially for veterans. We have so many free entrepreneur programs out there that teach us how to be successful. They all happen at the same time. They all require, hours out of your day. You can't do it all.
Mm.
So pick the ones that are the most effective for your needs.
Mm. How do you get clients? So when you have to, you know, so it's one thing to be an expert in the service that you're providing, but then there's a sales aspect to it. And I know that some people that aren't formally trained, that's a tricky thing. What have you learned through the process of trying to inform clients and attract clients so that, you know, they ask you for your services?
I love to go to mixers. So I'm very sociable. So I love to go to, you know, Chamber of Commerce and Mill City Meetup out here in San Antonio is fantastic. I love to go to those things because you get to meet people. And then when they start talking about their struggles at work, I can say, well, you know, if you did this, it probably could turn it around in a month or so. You know, just drop a few nuggets and say, you know, I have more ideas. Call me.
Yeah. I wonder what your Myers-Briggs type indicator is, but I'm sure you're very much an extrovert.
ESTJ.
ESTJ. There you have it, folks. There you have it, folks. Not to make people shy away that have a dream of starting their own business and are introverts, but it is a bit of it's a hurdle to get over.
Yes. You really have to be able to talk to anybody at any time.
If somebody was an introvert but really wanted to start their own business, I don't know, do you have any recommendations, or is it a lot like, hey, listen, you're not going to do it perfectly, you got to jump off the ledge and get going? Or do you have something more tactical in nature that you could recommend?
Baby steps. Baby steps. And you know what? Someone told me a few weeks ago, I was about to take on a project that I was deathly afraid of. I was so scared that I was going to fail. And she said to me, you have to fail 300 times before you win. So just go knock this one out. Let's go get it over with so we can get to your win.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, I feel like somebody else has said that too. And it's so true. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of failure before you reach wherever you need to go.
Yeah. And a lot of that comes from there's no way you could possibly know how to do it until you do it. Right?
Right.
So you perfect your craft as you do it.
I want to transition a little bit. I want to borrow some of your knowledge. So since your whole business focuses on assessing and let's call it repairing, repairing a call. Now it's not even repairing. Let's be more positive. It's optimizing or improving and enhancing a culture so that you get a business firing on all six cylinders. It's not fouled. It's well lubricated machine. It's out there to pursue its mission. Well, we've got a lot of transitioning service members that are probably looking for a place that has a good work culture. And the only culture we know is the one that we were indoctrinated in. So for those that are getting ready to transition, and it might be hard, but are there any indicators of when you're looking at applying for a company, whether or not there is a good work culture there?
There are a few questions that you can ask that can give you some pretty good hints. The interviewer is never going to flat out tell you, it's terrible here, please don't do this. They are never going to tell you that, even though some of them want to, desperately.
Oh, really? Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
So there are a few things that you can ask. You can ask your interviewer. Also, you could go on LinkedIn, look up that company, and then click on the people tab and maybe reach out to a couple of people that work there and try to get their perspective as well.
That's good.
Yeah, your interviewer may give you the answers, maybe not, but there's always other options.
But are there like specific questions, or is there a question that would be good?
I would say one of the biggest things I always ask is, how would you rate your work-life balance? That's usually one of my first ones. If you don't have a good answer for that one, it's going downhill from there.
How would you rate your work-life balance? And they look at you and they like grin, a fake grin.
Yep.
It's great. You know, like, yep. Oh.
Another question I love to ask is, how would you describe the communication between management and employees?
Oh, man, that's a good one, too.
That's good.
This is me writing that down. I can write the rest down later. I'm going to listen to this a few times while I'm editing. Okay, cool. Anything else?
I also highly recommend you ask them if they have a pay equity program in place.
Oh, I've got a question. All right. So this is what I don't understand. And I was listening to a podcast. It was by HBR. It's somebody that's a career coach, and they talked about DEI. And I know diversity, and I understand inclusion, and I understand equality, but I don't understand the word equity. And so when you use the word equity, what do you mean by that?
So there's a term called pay parity, and pay parity refers to when everyone has the exact same pay no matter what. But pay equity refers to everyone's pay is based on the same program or analysis. Okay. So if someone comes in and says, hey, you've got person A that's been doing this job for 10 years, you've got person B who's been doing this job for 5 years. As long as you can explain that that's why you're paying the other person more, you know, the 10-year employee more, then you're good. But if you've got a five-year employee over here that's making more than the one that's been there for 10 years, you've got some explaining to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That makes sense. I get that. I think there's so much of a, I'm not going to talk politics, but I know there are various political narratives around the word equity. So it's very, mm-hmm. for those of us that don't work in doing what you do or don't work in HR, the word equity can be very confusing. And sometimes yes. I associate that with something other than what you said. Let me ask you another question. What's in your future? Like, I know that I'm guessing you're not a person that just comes up with an ad hoc plan. You probably have a longer mid-range game plan in your mind. You started a business. What's and you're a PhD candidate. I mean,
I am.
What does the future look like for Aaliyah in the next 5 years?
I have plans to write two books. I have two books in the making. And hopefully I will have my doctorate by then.
Nice.
Wow. In what? What specifically?
It's leadership and education.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Are you using your post 9/11 GI Bill for that?
I have completely maxed out my veterans benefits. So I was very... very good at leveraging my GI Bill. So I used a large portion of it while I was active duty and then finished it out while I was retired. And so for my doctorate, I actually, the only reason I'm able to attend the school is because I was awarded a graduate assistantship. So I work for the school in order for them to pay my tuition for me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So the graduate assistantship, mm-hmm. I didn't know that was a thing. That, I mean, and that's great because I often wonder how do people even get doctorates and advanced degrees because yeah. they're spending their time doing studies. They can't be working and earning like hourly wages at the same time. But I guess that is a method, isn't it?
It is. It is.
How did you come to learn about that opportunity? Was that something that you found on the website or like where can other people go if they want to kind of do the same thing you're doing?
So there are a few websites that are centrally located for all of that information, but they can be very overwhelming. What I would say is reverse that. Start with the school that you want to go to. Then look at what programs they offer as far as ways to fund your education. And then contact your advisor or your department head, if you can't find any options, and tell them, I really want to complete this program, but I don't have funding. Do you have any ideas? That is how I got my assistantship.
Hmm. Wow. Okay. So it's about having the conversation with the university or college you want to be studying
yeah.
at.
Yep.
And this is the thing that just kind of clicked off in my head. There's a master's thesis requirement for most master's degrees. And I know there's a dissertation requirement for a PhD candidate. And that can take years. It depends on what you're doing. But it seems to me like a very strategic move because one could look at what you're doing as a PhD candidate and say, you have to work on your dissertation. But another person could say, well, as the owner of Work Culture Works, I'm actually refining my business plan and doing a deep dive in the type of services I can do, right? I mean, because you can actually have your dissertation strategically focused on what it is that you do as a consultant in enhancing your knowledge in that area. Is that kind of like where you're going?
Yeah, I did something very similar. Yes, my dissertation is going to be focused on why medical providers should be provided leadership training, not just in med school, but throughout their career, because medical providers are leaders from day one on the job, whether they want to be or not. And without training, they can create cultural problems in the work center.
Mm. Oh, man. You've got like medical staff. You've got Navy corpsmen right now. Like,
yep.
Sounds about right. But I'm sure. And then I bet that part of that dissertation is being able to explain the return on investment, which I'm sure there is.
Exactly. Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah. Just on average, if you spend $2,000 to send somebody to a week long leadership training, you're going to get around $15,000 return on investment.
Hmm. Wow. Almost seems like a no-brainer. And I'm sure that also comes in the form of mitigating workplace risk, right?
Exactly.
Because particularly in an environment where you deal with life and death, if you don't have a good culture, just like in a military organization that has to go into combat, if you don't have a healthy work culture, people could die.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. If you've heard the phrase, I'd follow him anywhere. If someone isn't willing to follow you anywhere, there's a problem. And everyone's in danger in that scenario if they're not.
I have a quick question for you. And
yeah.
A dear friend of mine who had passed, she used to say, don't look back, we're not going that way. But if we did look back just a little bit, knowing everything you know now, the experience that you've gained, and the education that you've received and what you're currently doing, going back to that one place where the culture of the work was so toxic and people were so afraid to say anything about how bad it was. Is there anything that you would do now if you had to? Like, knowing where you were in that work culture and knowing what you know now, would you feel like you could speak up? Or do you feel like, you know what, this is it. I made the right decision. I got out and now I'm doing what I'm doing because of it.
I don't think I ever could have spoke up safely.
Mm.
To this day, I still don't think I could have without some type of repercussion. The one thing I do regret, though, is I did not provide cover for those below me as well as I could have. I was so scared and so broken down that it affected my ability to protect the ones that I was charged to protect.
But it seems like an impossible position.
Yes.
It seems like,
a
regret is hard to hold on to, but being in an impossible position, I mean, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's very hard to take care of other people if you're not in a position to be able to take care of yourself, right? If you're not at peak performance and you're not in a healthy place, like, you can only hold the shield up for so long. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. It's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that manner, you did. You did the best that you could.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you're continuing to doing the best that you can.
Yeah.
Just doing what you're doing right now. So, you know.
Talk about a mission with purpose.
Yeah.
Huge. 100%. That's not me trying to do lame branding, new mission, career transit. That's a new mission with a great purpose. That is
a gold star EVP right there.
That's right. Aaliyah, we've taken up a lot of your time, but man, this has been so good. I want to close up with asking you if there were two or three things that you wanted listeners to remember as they're preparing for their own transition into a new career, into that first Civ Div, what would they be?
Don't be afraid to ask the question. There are so many people out here that are willing to help us if we just ask. So many people. And if you don't find the answer where you looked, keep looking. You will find it. And do not ever accept a job because I could do that. Do it because you want to.
Okay. I wrote those down. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remind myself of the second one there, right? Like don't take the easy way out simply because you think you can. Do something that you feel that connects with you. So I appreciate the reminder. I've asked some questions, but there might be listeners that have other questions. So how can people find you if they want to communicate with you? Or let's just say there's a veteran entrepreneur out there starting his own business and he wants that, or she wants that well-oiled machine and needs some help with Work Culture Works. How can people get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can find me on LinkedIn. That's the best place. I'm always there, always responding, always happy to help.
Outstanding. We'll put that in the episode notes. Sis, am I missing anything?
No, this was a great conversation.
Yeah, Aaliyah, this is great. A great topic. Very happy to have you on. Thank you so much for your time.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, we'll be in touch.
All right.
Bye.
And Aaliyah has left the virtual studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 She's awesome.
Yeah.
I want to hire her.
Undercover.
Undercover.
Undercover. I love it. Boss Whisperer.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah. No, that's good. But talk about like finding a market need in mm-hmm. something that you're passionate about. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's what an entrepreneur has to do. Identify the market need and have the guts to go out there and risk failure. You're going to fail anyway. Like you're going to make mistakes. Like just go for it and do it. Like what a great message.
Yeah. And you know what? Honestly, it's also the companies that hire her that have the guts to bring somebody on to tell them what they're doing wrong too. Mm. So wouldn't that be nice? I would love the opportunity to go into companies and just be like, you hired me so I can tell you what you're doing wrong, right? So I'm going to give it to you straight.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably a trick too, because that's nuanced, because mm-hmm. You also have to come out with the recommendations.
Yeah.
And that's where you make your money, because you do some of the, like that, it's where you definitely, it's not just the collection of the data, but it's the analysis and the recommendations on the back end mm-hmm. that ultimately prove a return on investment for any company that's willing to hear the critique.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I asked her the question also about going back, you know, in that one culture setting, because I want people to know that, you know, we can always find a regret somewhere, but we're still going to advance to where we want to be. It's going to happen. And something tragic that happened is now turning into being something so positive, not just for her as an individual, but she's able to spread that around and truly help people. And I really, really love that. So that's why I just wanted to make sure that maybe we can't change anything, but we certainly from the past, but we can certainly change things for the future. And she's doing just that. So, and that one thing that she said, I always grapple on it with the, don't just take a job, look for the job. And it's so simple, but it can be really difficult to find. But you just have to be willing to put yourself out there.
Yeah. And even if you guess wrong and it doesn't end up being the job, guess what?
There's thousands.
You can go to a different place.
Yeah, like, yeah, you really right. can.
You do not have an enlistment contract that you are adhered to. Like you can go somewhere else. I mean, I'm not bad mouthing military service, but let's face mm-hmm. it. Like there are silver linings to whatever challenge that we're going to have when we transition. And one of those silver linings is if you don't like where you're at or you hate what you're doing, yeah, you can just put in your 2 weeks notice and go find a different job, right?
Yep.
And maybe it requires a little bit of financial planning, right? Mm-hmm. Have that rainy day fund in your savings account so that, yeah, like you've got bills for the next 3 months. Like there's mm-hmm. nothing that you can survive. Like, and not only can survive, but you can go find a place where you enjoy it and you crush.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people that just take a job just to do that, to bank some money so that they have the ability to leave so that they can go find the job. But is it normal in the military? I mean, she went from building bombs to being in financial management. Is that normal? That is a huge jump. I'm like, how does one correlate with the other?
Well, you know, when you drop a Mark 82 on your foot.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, don't worry. It's big and heavy. Let's just say that. I don't know. I don't know what happened, but you know, but that actually, quite frankly, that's the military life. You know, wow. you sometimes do what it takes to accomplish the mission. And sometimes that's doing something way outside your wheelhouse. So, but
well,
it is what it is.
People already do that in the military, then boy, you can totally do that in the civilian world of, you don't like this, go do something else.
Yeah, 100%.
Because people that are in my world right now, we don't know how to do that very well. At least from the surroundings that I'm around, not a lot of people are willing just to say, I want to do that, but I don't know anything about it, so I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
That's our MO.
Yeah. Well, it builds resilience.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it does. Well, that wraps it up. I mean, this is a great conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another great episode. And if you're listening, thank you for listening. And if you like what you heard, okay, so check this out. Somebody corrected me, right? I asked for 5-star reviews, but I keep forgetting it's Apple Podcasts that has the stars. And if you listen to us on Spotify, you can leave comments, positive comments or negative comments, or, you know, give us some feedback. If there's something we could be doing differently, we're all about it. But if you like what you heard, think about giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or a positive comment. If you don't have the time to do that, maybe you're not getting ready to transition, or maybe you are, but you know somebody that could definitely benefit from this information. Maybe they're going on and they want to become a consultant and they want to start their own business, or maybe they're overcoming or in the middle of a challenge very similar to what our guest encountered. Share it. You can share the link. You can do it. We're going to post it on LinkedIn, as well as the contact information for Aaliyah, so that you can ask her questions. We will also receive feedback via email. So if you want to, you can send us an email at newmissionct@gmail.com, and we will get back to you as soon as we can. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.